Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Welcome, everyone. Excited about today's guest because, you know, he's in his late 30s and is the fucking so goddamn successful. I can't fucking take it. Okay. But besides that, he is so cute. I love his glasses. He has great lips.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, author, producer, television writer, comedian, Mike Drucker is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, it's me. I'm Mike Drucker. That's who you're hearing now.
Mike, listen. Yeah. All I have to say is that you were born the year I graduated college. And now, time for me to end this conversation. Good night, folks. So, Mike, people come on my podcast and they're like, oh, what's your podcast? You know, because no one ever listens to anyone else's podcast, even though. Yeah. But they tell you when you have a podcast about other great, like, they'll be like, oh my God, have you listened to Blah Blah Podcast? Oh my God. It's, and I'm like, oh, thanks for listening to my podcast. So I do a lot of research, you know, yeah, because I love people's stories and that's what it's about, people's stories.
Yeah.
All I want to do is talk about your childhood for the first half. And sure, all I know is that you were born on 15th, 1984, and you grew up in Florida.
Yeah.
And I know that we share the incessant bullying, but you're so fucking funny and you're so funny on Twitter and you write, you're the head writer.
Thank you.
For Samantha B. And you write for a woman, which is even, makes me love you even more. I mean, and your glasses. I mean, I don't even know what to do. I don't know what to do. And that really cool chair.
Oh, yeah.
What is that? Is that a...
It is a... I saw it on the website and I liked it. So I could not tell you what it is. I could not tell you what it's made of. When I moved to this apartment, though, when I got the Sam B job, it wasn't my first TV job, but it was,
right.
I was living in a furnished apartment in LA with a roommate. And so this was like back to me living alone. And I was like, I'm going to spend actual human money on furniture so I look like a fuckable adult. And that was part of that.
I don't even think you need the chair for the fuckable adult. If you don't follow Mike Drucker on Twitter, then you're missing out on life. SNL writer, Full Frontal, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Bill Nye Changed the World, Adam Ruins Everything, Video Game. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, Chase. So you grew up in Florida, which I just had a fight with my sister over Florida because she was like, oh, I love Florida. And I was like, not a fan of the governor. And then, then we got in a huge fight because she brainwashed. Okay, so what part of Florida did you grow up in?
I grew up in South Florida in Broward County, right outside Fort Lauderdale, about an hour north of Miami.
Okay, Jew area. And how many kids in your family? I never have to ask this, but now I have to ask it because I can't find any shit on your childhood. Go ahead.
There's weird intentionality in some of that. But that's because my brother like works in the government. So I try to like keep things civil so we can.
Oh, really? Okay.
But my brother, I have a brother, younger brother, and an older sister.
Okay.
Three.
And what do they do? And so you're the middle mental child. You're Jan.
Middle mental child.
You're Peter and Jan.
My brother works for the Department of the Interior. He's on this. He wants to be on the side of good. So the last few years were rough for him. He's not a supervillain. And my sister is actually got into TV wholly separate from me. She went to film school and she became a PA and she's now the line producer for Carpool Karaoke. So it's like a first generation showbiz family.
Parents.
Parents. I got them. My dad works for car dealerships in Florida. And my mom was, you know, she was a cashier. I mean, she's still alive, but she doesn't work anymore. But she was like, you know, one of those people who did, she worked as a cashier at a grocery store. She worked as a cashier at Sears. She had a bunch of like sort of.
She was a mom. She was, she had the hardest job out of anyone in that fucking house. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And apparently did a wonderful job because all three kids are successful.
You did great.
What are their names?
Brother's Daniel, sister's Tiffany, father is Dennis, mother is Erica.
Dennis, Erica, Daniel, and Tiffany, I really, like, seriously, what's wrong with your parents?
You know what? What's weird is my parents are creative, but they're not always original.
Right.
And so my sister, I think the story is, was named because they were just watching TV after my mom gave birth, and there was a character named Tiffany. And they're like, oh, there we go. They say that I'm named after my great-grandmother's maiden name was Miklowski, and they say I'm named after that. I don't quite believe it. I feel like it was retconned to that.
They had to make that shit up.
Right, exactly. I forget what my brother's named after. Yeah, it's not a creative claim. And Erica's a weird name for a woman in her 60s. Like, Erica feels like she should be, like, 23.
Right. So funny. Erica, come on. And then it's your mom. Erica, we have to go.
We have to go now.
So, I know that you were a bully kid, which I really want to talk about because this is, you know, why we are who we are. Was your brother bullied or your sister bullied?
Yes and no. My brother was bullied for a little bit. He was sort of fat like I was for a long time, but he actually lost a ton of weight in middle school, I want to say. So like by the time he hit high school, he wasn't necessarily at the top of the food chain, but he sort of lost that one major thing.
Unintended.
Yeah.
Right. Did he go from like obese to like normal or?
Yeah. Like obese to relatively thin.
Okay. And then what about Tiffany?
Tiffany wasn't, she wasn't bullied, but she was like an art student. So I feel like my family bullied her for that.
Right.
So I think like my sister definitely suffered insults and condemnations and cruelty. It just didn't necessarily come from her age group.
And she's the youngest of and two older brothers.
She's
the oldest. That's right. Fuck. Yeah. Younger brother. Shit. I had it all fucked up. Okay. So everything is average. Is that what you would say? Like you're have a house or, you know, you live and you go to school. Do you go to public school?
I went to public school all the way through. My sister went to Catholic school the first 5 years. My mom's Catholic, my father's Jewish, which is where the confusion comes in. All of my mom's family's in the Middle East and Middle East, Midwest.
Right.
All of my family's in the mid. My mom's family's in the Midwest, but all of my dad's family growing up was in Florida. So I grew up entirely around Jewish family members, but raised by a very Catholic woman.
That would make me want to eat.
It does. It really does.
I mean, what mixed fucking messages? Did they have a good marriage?
They do now. They didn't have a good marriage then, I would say, but they do now. Right. They're like solid. Right. I think the term is codependent, which I know is negative, but I kind of like it. You know.
No, I know. I think we all end up that way.
Yeah.
So did you go to religious school or anything? I mean,
I went to CCD. I went to Catholic Sunday school.
And were your Jewy relatives like, Dennis, what is going on with the kids going to the Catholic school?
They were when my parents got married. When my parents got married, my mom's mom was upset because my dad wasn't Catholic, and his mom was upset because she wasn't Jewish.
Right.
And so I think there was a lot of animosity early on, like actual animosity early on. But I think the moment that my mom popped out a grandkid, they were like, oh, right, we get grandkids out of this.
Right, right.
And they were like totally on board. I will say, though, that it's weird that like, because I have cousins, because like my father's sister has children who are Jewish. And so it's weird when you're like, you turn 13 and you get nothing.
Your cousin turns
13 and they get everything.
Right. So did you grow up like going to family Jewy things?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But that's also why I really know only like the big tent poles. Like when I have like Jewish friends in New York and they're like, oh, are you celebrating this holiday? I'm like, I know like four.
Right. And they're the ones everyone else knows, even the Nazis. So that is so fucking confusing. And your mother was like a practicing.
Yeah.
How did your parents meet?
My mom was actually my dad's boss at a convenience store in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah, how about that? But I think he actually like sexually harassed upward, going by the story.
Right. So they lived in Chicago and then moved to
Florida. Yeah, they met in Chicago. They got married in Chicago. And basically, my mom hated the cold. She still hates the cold. And my dad got a job opportunity in Florida that was kind of double what he was making now. And my dad was like, oh, I don't know. Do we want to move, you know, leave our families behind? And my mom was like, yes, let's go. And so they moved.
Wow. All right. So when you're with your Jewy family as a kid, right?
Yeah.
Are you like thinking, oh, wait, I'm related to them, but they don't think Jesus is the Messiah and they're not like, it must have been fucking confusing.
It was actually the reverse. It actually made it kind of easy. I will say that my Jewish family isn't very religious. They're very, very proud of the cultural heritage.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think any of them could say a fucking prayer to save their life that's out of the standards. So like our Passover when I was a kid was very much my grandfather being like, all right, we're sad, salt. All right, skip. Okay, we can eat. Like literally would say skip. So, and my mom, to her credit, she's very religious, but she's not evangelical about it. So like when we stopped going to church, she was bummed, but she didn't make it a thing. So she was never like, your father's family's going to hell. That was never her MO.
Right.
It was much more like, I don't know. I think it would actually have the opposite effect. Rather than it being like, you guys are going to hell because you don't believe in Christ. It was almost me being like, seems like there's a lot of people who aren't down with this thing.
And right.
You know what I mean?
So it opened your mind. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and are Tiffany or Daniel religious?
No, I don't. Not as far as I know. My family doesn't always like talk about personal things. Like even my mom, we know she's religious because we grew up with her. But if you met her at dinner, you wouldn't know.
Wow. I love that. Okay. So you're going to school. Is everyone overweight in your family?
My sister, my brother, my dad, and I are very overweight. My mom is incredibly thin. And no matter what she eats, she doesn't gain weight. So we had the bad eating habits of both like a very overweight man with low self-esteem eating through it and a woman who can eat through it because it never puts on any weight.
So they both ate a lot.
They both ate a lot and they both ate a lot of, you know, we also didn't have a lot of money. So yes, we ate crap because it tasted good, but also there was a lot of like, you know, mac and cheese dinners, a lot of Taco Bell dinners, a lot of Burger King dinners, just because my mom was working till midnight. My dad was working till 10, you know?
Right. So you were left alone a lot.
Yeah. And my sister had to care for us. Like a 12-year-old had to care for like an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Right. That's always, yeah. So are you good in school? Everyone is good in school in your family?
Good in school. My family, I think because my parents, I don't think they overtly felt this, but my mom, she always wanted to go to college. She never got the chance to go at all. My dad dropped out after a year. And I think that to them, they always felt disappointed that they didn't do more academically.
Right.
And so the good faith way to say it is that they pressured us. And the bad faith way is to say they put us in direct competition with each other.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. But my sister and brother were salutatorian. However, I was valedictorian. Yes. So.
Do you have like friends? Like,
yeah.
So you have your little group. Like I had a group of nerdy, there was like 4 of us, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it was like,
yeah.
Like, when did you realize, oh, we're fat, we're overweight, we're.
Oh, I think pretty early on. You know, I was also a very cute kid until I was about 6 or 7. So right. I also like, you know, have a distinct memory of like the point when, you know, like old ladies at Supercuts would stop ooing over you. You know what right. I mean? Like there's a moment when you stop being cute. And right. If you're old enough. So around 8 or 9, I really chunked up. And I think a lot of it was just the fact that I had been a relatively thin, cute kid. So like clothes felt bad. And especially again, growing up in Florida, when a shirt is tight, it fucking feels tight,
right,
man.
Right,
it's wet and it's gross. Like when you're fat in Florida, you know you're fat.
Right.
Definitely.
I can totally relate to the, oh, you're cute and now you're not because yeah. I'm 58. Okay. So, and no one is like, you know, I used to get so annoyed with the, hey, baby, you know, and now I'm like, really? Seriously? Like nothing?
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
When do you start, you get bullied, right? Like, is it, now for me, it was, I get up, I go to school, it starts, it doesn't end. Yes. Doesn't end. Till I get home. like, did you wake up in the morning and were like, okay, here we go again, or?
What's weird is, you know, I didn't have like a specific bully. And so it felt sometimes like things out of nowhere, or I would have like temporary rivals, but I would have teachers sometimes bully me. I had this weird thing where I would have teachers, I was bullied for small things. I wasn't always bullied for just being fat, but like, right. For example, I hung out with a bunch of goth kids, but I was like the fat goth kid. So like, right. It wasn't even like I was necessarily being like shoved into a locker, but like in the group of friends, I was still being shit on.
Right.
So there was that, or there was like teachers that I would do well in their class, but they didn't like me personally. So they right. would be weirdly, and again, it's a public school in Florida in like 2001. Nobody's
right.
like, nobody's going to yell at the German teacher, Miss Tice, because she called me fat. But like right. you would get that, you know?
Right. Also, Florida and the public schools, not good. Not no. good.
Yeah. So I would get like, you know, in elementary school, I did have a bully. Middle school, I kind of had a bully.
Who was
high
the
school,
bully in elementary?
Elementary was a guy named Elliot. I forget his last name. It's lost
fuck
to history.
Fuck you, Elliot. You fucking Elliot. Asshole. Fuck you. What's Elliot doing now?
I hope he's dead. That could be, like, I would like it to be. I don't, if he was also the, he clearly had a lot of insecurity looking back. He was also the kid
yeah.
who like, you know, the kid when you're a kid who's like, who's constantly lying, but you know, they're lying where it's like, my dad has an 80-inch TV. And you're like,
right.
No, you don't. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, right, right. And who cares? Even yeah, if you right. still have an 80, if you have an 80-inch dick, then maybe we would care, but who, no one gives a fuck about your father's television.
Right, okay. Exactly.
So are you stress eating? Are you hiding your feelings eating? Are you just like...
Stress eating, definitely stress eating.
Yeah.
You know, stress eating. The moment I learned how to make ramen was like the end of my body at 11.
Really?
Yeah, because instant ramen, you just boil a little water, toss it in. It when you're a little kid, it feels like you've cooked a meal.
Right.
I would eat like 3 or 4 of those outside.
Are
of
they place. Really bad for you? I bought a whole bunch for Ben. For mine.
They're not. They're bad for you if you eat all of them at once.
Right.
You know,
but they are good. They're so good, aren't
they're
they?
They're so good. They're good. I still eat them. I just don't yeah. eat all of them in a day.
Right. So nope, I was like that too. You know, I had a joke in my act when I was started out, one of my first jokes about how I was in the marching band and I had to sell, I can't believe I'm telling this stupid fucking joke. And I had to tell we had to sell candy bars.
Yeah.
Remember for the school trips and I ate all the fucking candy bars. Like I had to ask my mother for $50, which was so fucking embarrassing, but okay. And you know, I don't think people realize when you look different, all you want to do at that age is blend, is just walk in your class.
Completely.
No, just leave me alone. And
no
you're
one's saying right. like, hey, how about that? How about those shoes?
Right, right. And you're, you know, like I was gigantically tall and it's like, you just walk in, it's like, oh God, it just like, please just look the other, you know? And I think, right. which is why, you know, I write it in my book about how I want to control the laughter. I yeah. want to control it.
Yeah, you're not of course. Gonna,
yeah. So your parents are working really late.
Yeah.
Your sister is like the paternal person. It's you and your brother.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating like shit. You get into video games. Now, I find this fascinating and I really yeah. want to have a discussion about the video game thing because I really want to know, and we're going to talk about Silent Hill too because it's fascinating. Like I was reading about.
Oh, know, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's so interesting. And the psychological, like the way you talk about it psychologically is so, such a different perspective. All right. So I didn't grow up with video games. So
right,
my
yeah.
soothing thing, you know, I would play mute, you know, like I would play the piano and I,
right.
play, you know, I was in the band or I, you know, you would find shit, you know, my generation, we knew how to be bored. We
yeah.
knew once we were bored what to do with like, okay, got to find something to do
yeah.
Or read or make or run around. And I feel like this new generation has no idea how to be bored. But you get into video games. Now, all I know of video games when I'm is Tetris. And I was like, fucking, I was, when I was in college.
Yeah.
I was like the only woman who would go to the fucking game center at the student center and just
yeah.
play Pac-Man and Atari. Like I was fucking obsessed, but it
yeah.
wasn't psychological. It
yeah,
wasn't.
I gotcha.
So you get into video games and it is soothing
yeah, of course.
For you in a way. Can you explain And I have a million questions about this, but can you explain how that worked and how you found Silent Hill?
I liked video games since I was a little kid. So even before I was like a chunky kid, I was into games. I definitely think they became a comfort later, you know, and sort of like you were saying, you know, you take control of the laughter when you become a comedian. I think sometimes, you know, as much as we talk about ourselves as artists, when you are doing comedy live on stage, it does feel like you're playing a game. It feels like there's a back and forth, you know, and you're trying to, you know, you're not doing a fucking play where you have to stick to everything. You're like, oh, I'm going to dodge and I'm going to move and I'm going to try to get in the direction. Oh, I know what they want. I'm going to get around them. And, you know, video games provide a lot of the same feeling. It's, you know, whereas comedy is a power fantasy that actually plays out in real life and succeeds 85% of the time.
depending on who you are. Yeah.
Right. Depending on who you are, I'd say 60-40 for me.
Yeah.
But like in video games, it's, you know, again, you get to take control of the situation. And as a kid, just like, you know, kids mash Batman into Superman figures, imagine that instead of mashing those two figures together, a company was paid a lot of money to basically go, we've animated them, and they mash together just like they do in the cartoon. And it looks like the cartoon, it has the same actors, and you're basically playing the cartoon.
Right.
That's what it felt like to me as a kid, was I got to like, not just experience the cartoon, but I got to have an active participation in it.
And you also have a participation in the outcome, right? Of this. Okay. So you have a lot of control. So psychologically, you're leaving this fucking institution where you have no control.
Right.
And coming home and going into a completely different world where you are the controller.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, look at stuff like Minecraft. Minecraft is after my time. Minecraft came out when I worked at a video game company.
Right.
But with Minecraft, you know, the reason it's popular is it's basically Legos, but you can make games into them.
Right.
You know, if you're a kid who has no control over your life, but you can build an entire kingdom with your friends and it walk through that kingdom and role play things in that kingdom, that's very appealing.
So would you come home from school and immediately that was it? You were sucked into these?
Depending on if I had home, I was usually like homework first person. I would burn through homework if I didn't do it on the bus.
Right.
But,
you had to take a bus? My God, I want to give you a hug right now. That's fucking awful. Okay.
School bus. Wheels on the bus, man. They go round and round. Yeah, no, usually if I had nothing else or I didn't have like to mow the fucking lawn or something, I would go home and hit the Super Nintendo, hit the PlayStation, hit the 64, hit the computer. Yeah.
And your parents weren't like, Michael?
Well, the thing is, my parents are also socially broken people. So they didn't have like the you're being antisocial. And I think if my grades were doing very poorly, they would have been like, hey, this is a problem. But I think to them, they were like, the one thing that we want him to do well, he's doing well. So let's not broke what's...
Right. You have no... Yeah. Okay. I want you to explain that the Silent Hill is a... You uncover secrets, correct?
Yeah.
It's a horror video game.
Horror video game.
Really about a cult, you've said, in a town. You said twice that you identified in this interview. You identified with this woman, this girl, and another guy. Yeah. Can you explain? And they're just characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you talk about that? Yeah.
So, you know, if for those who don't know, Silent Hill is a game series. It's a horror video game series, possibly a little bit like Resident Evil, which you might be more familiar with because that's a little more, that's like one step more mainstream. But in Silent Hill, there's this town called Silent Hill that's basically kind of like Twin Peaks. You know, it's a town that has a dark secret, and people who go to that town tend to get trapped there psychologically. And in these games, you usually play one of those people who gets trapped in that town, and you're usually being punished for something. It usually turns out that like you did some sort of horrible thing, and you find that out later in the game. And in Silent Hill 2, which I actually wrote a book about, you meet other characters who are also going through shit in this town, and they're confused and they're lost. And one of them is this woman, Angela. And you find out that she's in this town because she like killed her father and her brother who were sexually assaulting her.
Yeah.
And another guy, Eddie Dabrowski, who's in that town because he like shot somebody because he was made fun of for being fat.
Right.
And I really connected to those two because as a kid, a neighbor, you know, did whatever. and which I don't want to go into detail about, but it is something where you relate to that.
I will kill that person.
You can kill that person.
Yeah.
It's something that you relate to because you do carry a lot of guilt. And the game series is a lot about guilt. It's a lot about like, what did I do wrong? Did I deserve this somehow?
Right.
Was my response to it wrong? You know, a lot of Angela's arc is like, was she a bad person for killing the people who were assaulting her? You'd say no, but it's possible that if you're that woman and that's your family, you don't know how you feel. And so like, you know, you have guilt with things where you're like, should I have said something? Did I try to say something and it didn't work? Should I, you know, like you blame yourself. So I definitely related to her. And then there was this character, Eddie Dombrowski, again, where it's like that fat rage, which I don't know if you had or you ever had bully rage, but there's like, you get bullied enough as a kid, you snap.
Yeah. Right. Which is, yeah.
You know,
why we have a lot of massacres. This is going to be a weird question. Do you feel like that because you related to Angela,
mm-hmm.
what was Dombrowski's name?
Eddie
Dombrowski. Because you related to them, do you feel like, because I get this with a lot of guy comics and this all this Me Too shit. I talk a little bit about Bill Cosby in my book. Do you ever think, oh, they're lying or, you know, because there's, like with Cosby, it was like, it was so weird for people even believe. And I was like, it's not Dr. Huxtable who did it. It's Bill Cosby who did it.
Right. Yeah. You know? I've never had a situation where I've thought like, oh, well, these people, there must be a conspiracy to take down Bill Cosby. Or, you know, a conspiracy against Louis C.K. Like, I think there's certain situations, you know, like the, you know,
no, but like
the Aziz situation where it's like she told the story to someone else who then wrote that story.
I can't with that. That is just beyond that one. Forget it. Bad date. Didn't read social cues, you know, whatever. But
yeah, I believe that it was a horrible experience for her and she had and it was a horrible time. But again, like, I don't think she was lying. I just think that maybe the editor in writing her story for her, I don't know how exactly, I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass.
An agenda or not. Yeah. I totally understand that. But I feel like you would be a little more safe for a female comic.
Oh, yeah.
To speak to and not feel like, you know, what did she do? You know, like that sort of shit that we get all the time. You
of
know?
Course. No, like, I look, man, I fucking, we all know people in comedy.
Yeah.
We know how many bad people there are in comedy. So on the front end, I'm not going to be like, wait a minute, a guy in comedy did something wrong?
Right.
So I believe on that set and on the back end, too. I know how shitty a lot of friends of comedians, including other comedians, can be. So I know the danger one puts themselves in by even saying something.
Right. It's so really slippery slope.
So I both believe it happened because I know how shitty people are, but I also believe it happened because lying feels like a much easier path to, I mean, much harder path to take than telling the truth.
And you definitely have a different perspective, I think, than most straight men.
I mean, I also don't have, I also hate a lot of dudes in comedy for personal reasons. So maybe I'm just ready to believe.
Okay. I have a question. As someone who's the generation, you know, older than you, before you, I believe, and I really want to know what you think about this. I have often thought, you know, these kids who are violent and get their hands on real guns and go to their schools and kill people.
Yeah.
I often think, okay, if these people, because a lot of times, like, they were addicted to video games, I think sometimes if your brain is not working correctly, that you, every time you get on and you shoot a bunch of people and they're dead, and then you get back on and they're back, that maybe there's this disconnect, like, do you feel like there is a link in that way for these kids who are, you know, mentally ill, and if so, what do we do about shit like that, you know?
Well, I think, is that possible that a mentally ill kid could take that from a game? I think it's possible. You know, I'm not a psychologist. I think it's possible. However, I think it's so entirely rare.
Right.
That, you know, what disease are you really curing with it? And if that person's mentally ill, is, you know, that illness looking for any sign? Is that sign going to come from movies or music or what have you?
Right.
It's also it's kind of a cultural worry that people have had since novels became a thing.
Right.
And so sometimes I find it hard to like repeat, you know what I mean? Like, you know, saying like rock and roll is going to make people more violent.
Right. Oh, I remember.
I will say, I definitely think that, you know, it's possible that these things, any popular media presents role model characters that are fictional characters or fake, you know, musicians, fictionalized right. versions of themselves that are bad role models that people go, oh, I could impress this person or I'm just like this person.
Right. But I
think that necessarily has to do with what the medium is and more like the mentally ill person looking up to an image that's a fictional image of a person who's supposed to be not taken seriously.
Right. Was anyone else in your family into the video games?
My brother was. He's not anymore. He plays sports games like all the time, but he's not like my kids.
Yeah, that's what my kids play.
Not for me.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin. And I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
Okay, so when you're in high school, are you involved in any sort of extracurricular activities besides being the valedictorian?
Yep, I was in National Honor Society.
Oh my God!
I was in the Science and Engineering Club and I was in the Robotics Club and German. I was in German Club. Yeah, I was in a few clubs.
You graduate, Your parents must have been so proud that you were the valedictorian.
They were very proud.
Speak? You spoke at graduation?
I spoke at graduation.
What was your speech about?
I My speech was really short because I knew the salutatorian was going to go long, and I knew that nobody at a graduation wants a long speech.
Right.
And I deduced that early. So this could be like, this could be like my bacteria first sign of life stand-up.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, mine was my bat mitzvah. So I'm thinking right. This is your first. Yeah.
And the thing is like, cause I was assessing the crowd where I was like, okay, I know he's going to go long. Cause we had to like submit ours and he submitted first. And I was like,
right.
They're going to be very tired. They're going to want us to just run through this.
Right.
So my speech was mostly, and I went to a mostly black high school. So mm-hmm. I also knew that I did not want to come off as being like, look who won, you know,
right.
That itself is terrible. So what I did was I basically turned it around and talked about a lot of the students had gone through personal tragedies throughout the year who graduated, like a guy was nearly paralyzed in a horrible car crash. Another person, we had a person who died. And so I sort of like went through and I was like, you know, this person did this and this person did this. And that's such like an inspiring way to like overcome. And I actually got amens from the audience, which is better than anything that's ever happened in stand-up. Better than anything in stand-up. I've been chasing that for 30 years.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like, it was sort of a speech where I just turned it back on the audience and was like, hey, you know, you guys have done more than I have. And I kept repeating
right.
that. I was like, all I did was do
yeah. yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah. We had kids die in our high school. I think it's awful. Okay. You end up going to NYU. Mm-hmm. Now, why did you pick NYU? I'm mm-hmm. going to assume it's because New York and get the fuck out of Florida.
Yep.
Not that I hate Florida, everyone. I'm just saying, he wanted to leave.
I wanted to leave.
So where did your brother and sister go to college?
My brother and sister, my sister initially went to the Kansas City Art Institute.
Mm.
And then she transferred to University of Miami mm-hmm. because she went from being visual artist to wanting to go into film.
University of Miami is a great school.
Yeah, it's a great school. Yeah. My brother went there too.
Yeah, that's a really good school.
The two schools I applied to were UM and NYU. So
wow, that's it?
Yeah.
I think you could have gotten into like, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton.
Here's the weird thing is because they would have these meetings where you could have these one-on-ones with them. Not like the interview when you're applying, but almost like the, hey, are you interested?
Yeah.
And each one, I sort of came off being like, I don't know if this is really me. It feels like these people value their fanciness in a way I don't
right.
quite connect with. You know, like it's almost like I dislike that like frats and sororities are big networking systems.
Right.
And so
right.
when someone's like, you know, when you go here, you have a giant networking system. There's a
oh,
party
I
that's
know.
Like,
please, I went through that with my kids. Yeah.
Right. And with NYU, it was almost like, I don't know, they drop you off in the middle of the city and you figure shit out. And I was like, that's what I want to do.
That's it. So you go to NYU. What do you study?
I thought I was going to get into publishing. I should back up a bit. I really wanted to make video games, but in high school, I took programming classes and was catastrophically bad at programming.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, then there's no other way to make a video game. So I sort of shelved that dream.
Right. Okay.
And then So I was like, okay, I love books. I'll get into publishing. I'm not good enough to be an author because I hate myself, but I like books. And so I went to NYU and I majored in English and journalism.
Yeah.
Journalism just because it could let me do writing right away.
Right, right.
And I interned at a couple publishers and it just didn't seem like the industry for me. People sort of seemed like everyone seemed burnt out and everyone seemed like they wanted to go to a different industry themselves.
Right, right.
And I have friends in publishing and I value publishing because they publish things, but
right.
it seemed like a tough go. So somewhere in the mix there around I didn't know what I wanted. I was like randomly submitting articles to places that weren't going anywhere. Cause I was like, maybe I'll do journalism. I was even like, even though I'm not a sports fan, I started writing sports for the NYU newspaper just so I could like write something, you
know? And you knew you were funny, right? And like, when did you realize I'm funny?
I think I thought I was funny. I didn't know yet.
Did anyone like say, hey, Mike, you're pretty funny. Like
They did. And there were signs, like I took a creative, like a short story class.
Yeah.
And the teacher consistently pointed out that he liked that I was the only person who'd write like funny short stories.
Right, right.
You know, while like most, a lot, by the way, a lot of stories about student sleeping with their writing teacher. Like, very right. overt fuck me fan fiction.
Right, right.
But you know, people would comment that I tried to write funny, that I tried to be amusing in stuff that I wrote, or that, like, even, like, academic papers for, like, right. you know, when I was in grad school, I got my master's in English as well.
Oh my God.
I like school. I like the school. Yeah, no, but, like, I'd have funny titles, or I'd have, like, jokes within the essay that, like, made sense with what I was saying. I would just have slipped in a joke, and people would comment right. on that. And I just enjoyed it. It was a natural impulse. Maybe it was a natural defense mechanism from when I was a kid. And I just like,
yeah. You know.
But in my junior year, maybe 2 weeks before I turned 21, I did my first open mic at New York Comedy Club in the, remember the narrow room?
Yes.
In the fucking narrow room.
That's hilarious.
And that was it for me. Then I just kept doing it.
So what prompted you to get on stage that first time?
I think that, you know, I always liked stand-up
yeah.
until I did it. And then I just stopped liking it, except when I do it.
Like, oh God, I can't, yeah, and people are like, you watch this one special? I'm like, no,
of course not. Why would I?
Yeah.
Like, I'm either going to be mad that I think I could do better or mad that I could never do as good.
Right. Yeah, I didn't write that bit. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I always liked stand-up, and I thought it was cool. And I think, like, even, like, watching, I might have even, like, watched, like, Last Comic Standing, like, the first season of it, and been like, oh, these are normal people.
Right.
You know, because before the most recent comedy boom, I think the image of stand-up was still very Seinfeld-y, where it's, like, people who are a little older than me, who are a little more, maybe, like, slightly more button-up or have it together, who are telling jokes about, like, families and stuff, maybe.
Right, right.
Because you didn't get a wide view of stand-up unless you stayed up till 2 a.m. watching Comedy Central.
Right.
And so it just never felt like a thing that a normal person does. It felt like something that special people do. You could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer. Those are all jobs that have little Playmobil figures. There's right. no stand-up Playmobil figure. There's no, right. you know, so, I don't know. People told me I was funny.
Did you hang, like, because it's such a difference between watching stand-up on TV.
Yeah.
And going to a club, because what you're saying is, you know, they were buttoned up, but that's what they presented on TV. But in the clubs, there were a bunch of us who were just like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It completely demystified it immediately.
Right. So how did you feel about after your first set? You get your first laugh and that's the fucking end of it.
It was like, know. Yeah, I mean, I even remember it. It must have been five people at this open mic. I got maybe one laugh. I think it was more than even, it was honestly something about my dad masturbating. It was like such a first draft, first set, first open mic type joke.
Hilarious. Okay.
Such a, I don't know, this is fun. But it got like a laugh. But I think it was even more than a laugh. It was like the pure adrenaline. Cause I never was a drama student. I never did plays, you know. It was, and like, I had a shot of adrenaline after that speech when I was valedictorian, but that felt like a one-off thing.
Right. So you then, is this when you start writing for, about video games and the really funny articles?
That's when I started to do that. Cause I sort of realized that I had that niche, which I still have today.
Right. You know, of course.
I just wrote for this thing called the Dice Video Game Awards, and they basically every year they're like, hey, just write us a monologue for this. And I'm like, you got it.
Right.
And I get paid. So, which is still the silliest thing that we're paid to do this.
I know.
But yeah. I started writing funny articles about video games. I started writing for McSweeney's. You know, like I wrote nerdy pieces and submitted those to McSweeney's and those guys. Right. And then I started writing more straightforward pieces. You know, doing stand-up. I also, it's so lucky I went to college in New York, because when you start stand-up in New York, you're a step further than anyone else started.
Right, right. Yes.
You know, you don't, like, I have already moved to New York for, you know what I mean? Like,
And also, you're surrounded by great, I mean, I always say, people are like, oh, LA, Chicago. No, if you want to, I feel like if you want to be a great stand-up, you have to, that's where I started too. I mean, it's, the audiences are so theater savvy. They sense bullshit immediately. You can't get away with anything. And it really teaches you how to be a great stand-up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I was lucky enough that I got to like meet people who wrote for The Onion. And from just doing stand-up with Megan Gantz, who wrote for The Onion, she was one of the EPs on Modern Family. I'm not sure what she's doing now, but brilliant lady.
I can tell you what she's doing. Listen, guys, I'd like to purchase that house. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
But like, brilliant human being, but she got me into The Onion, you know? So I got to freelance for The Onion.
See how great women are? Okay, so then you get an internship at SNL, is this correct?
That's correct. When I was a senior in college, I got an internship at SNL, which I carried into grad school.
So how did you get that internship?
I applied to SNL and then I didn't get it, but a friend of a friend knew someone in the casting department who needed an intern, and no one wanted to intern in New York City casting. Because New York City casting is mostly, who's this criminal for Law and Order, or who's this dead body?
Right.
And they were basically like, if you intern here a semester, we will get you into SNL. And I was like, sure, fuck it, why not? And so I interned for NBC casting for a semester, and it was actually kind of fun. One, you learned how much of a database all of the entertainment industry is. Like when you're like, all right, looking for a this weight, this height, and there's like 90 people.
Right.
And it was cool to see like character actors reading Men's Fitness, waiting to be called in. but from there, I interned at SNL. I was a writer's intern, which is the luckiest break in the world.
Oh my God, who were the luckiest writers break. When you were the intern?
God, I was there the luckiest fucking year. I was there the first year Andy Samberg was on the show. It was Kristen Wiig's first season, Bill Hader's first season. Sudeikis had only done like 4 episodes the previous season, so it basically his first season. Seth was, I think Seth was head writer at that point. No, Tony was there. Yeah. Maya was there.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the writers know when you like comedy. You know, because a lot of people who intern for SNL like showbiz, and that's perfectly fine. You know, if you want to become a showbiz producer and produce like Glamour.
Or be an agent, or, you know, be adjacent, you know, be arm candy. Yeah.
Right. But like, and so me and this other writer, Jessica Conrad, who now writes maybe for The Simpsons. Uh-huh. So we were like, you know, we were kiss asses, but at the same time, we clearly demonstrated we love comedy. You know, we talk about people's, like, we go to see the writers one, you know, person shows that they do at like UCB or something. Like, we engage with not just the stars, but also the writers and what the writers thought.
Right. And the process.
Yeah. And through that, we were allowed to start submitting jokes to Weekend Update. And Jess got shit out like right a fucking way. And I took like a year and a half to figure it out how to write like a monologue joke.
But what was the first joke you got in?
The first joke I got in, it's not even that great of a joke, but it's something like someone on eBay put the entire VHS collection of the show The 700 Club has been put on auction. And then the joke was like, here's how that auction will go. Going once, going twice, sold to nobody because no one would want that. It's fine. It's fine.
Right.
The best update joke I ever got was, the inventor of the trampoline died this week at the age of 85. His friends and family said that they'll always remember his last words, look what I can do. That's the best joke I wrote.
I love that. So how fucking great did that feel when you got a joke into the monologue?
It was honestly like one of those like human moments that, you know, when you're dying, you'll think of.
Right.
That was one of them. It was, I would equate that to my first time I got on stage.
Right.
Like, it was that feeling of like, oh shit, there's a bigger world that I can possibly be a part of. So or in some small way I have.
Right. Did you call your parents? Were you like, oh my God?
I called my parents. Well, also like, because backing up a bit, when you're there, you get like a list of what's going in, including what update jokes are going in. So like, there were one or two times when I'd have things that would go to dress rehearsal. And they bomb, or they get, or laugh, and they get cut. Because look, honestly, and I don't blame them now being on the other side of it, you're going to cut an intern's joke before you cut a staff member's joke.
Right.
It sucks, but that's, them's the breaks.
Right.
And so I was always very like, don't call it yet. You have a joke. And this happened 3 or 4 times, you know, just cut after cut. And so when I saw it finally was going to air, I was like, I'm not even going to call them until update starts, because I'm certain that it'll be cut at the last second.
That's the story. That is such a good lesson, because people are like, why didn't you tell me that you blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, because I don't believe it until it's literally on the fucking television or in the, like, I do not, even after I filmed it, I don't believe it's ever going to, you know what I mean? You have, people don't realize that. And are you doing stand-up at all during this time of your internship?
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing stand-up, but I'm only like 2 or 3 years in, so.
Right.
You know.
And who's in your class of stand-up?
Oh, man, great stand-ups. Emily Heller, Lucas Brothers, who are nominated for an Oscar. Yeah. Mike Lawrence, Dan St. Germain, Jamie Lee. I feel like I'm forgetting like some of the best people. Sean Patton.
Sam Morrell.
No, weirdly.
Wow.
Oh, wait, did you say Sam Morrell?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Sorry, I heard Dan Burrell, and I was like, no, well, I don't know him, and then I worked backwards.
Yeah, love Sam Morrell.
Sam is a machine.
Yeah, and he's so fucking good. He really is.
Like,
there's not a lot. He's the one of his generation. I'm not kidding.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
There's a class of comedian, of stand-up that's like, stand-up, that like, I wish I could be, but do not have that energy.
Yeah, he's really has such the brain for it. He's so fucking, I love him.
Great.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Mike Drucker. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Senwards. Now, please subscribe. Please leave a review. Please make it 5 stars. Please beg, plead. Please buy my book. Yes, I can say that when they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. Please. Or the audiobook or the Kindle. It's really great. I'm very proud of it. And you'll love it. You will love it. Go to judygold.com. There's links to buy the book there. There's information on me because I'm so fascinating. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm a Jew, for all upcoming gigs, dates, thoughts, feelings. And that's about it. I'm very happy we're ending this fucking pandemic at some point soon. But still, get your vaccine. You know, wear your mask, please. And just be well. And if you haven't watched Hysterical, the film that is on, it's a documentary, it's on Hulu, then we're done. We're not friends anymore. So check that out as well. And that's it. And I hope you have a wonderful week and that you tune in next week. And thank you so much for listening. And as we always say, so long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
It's Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
No.
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.